Well, my blood, this is George G, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, Strong and Powerful Matthew Lysine. Matthew, are you ready to do this?
I am ready, George. How are you doing?
I am doing great. Let's go. Matthew has been a reporter since 2001, spending 17 years with Bloomberg News. 2015, he began covering crypto to become an expert in the Ethereum blockchain world. He's the author of Out of the Ether and the co-founder of Decentral Media. Matthew, tell us a little about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Yeah. So I grew up here in California. I'm in Los Angeles now, but moved around for college and lived in San Francisco for a while, and then moved to New York City in 2004 with my wife. That's where I got the job at Bloomberg News. Lived there for 13 years, had both of my sons there, were born in Manhattan, but came back in 2017 just because we had 13 years is a long time in New York City. And it's kind of a tough place to live, especially with children, if you're not like a multimillionaire. So back in LA, really liking it. It's my hometown, just more my vibe. I'm definitely not kind of the A-type personality that I think thrives in Manhattan. In 2015, I had been covering Wall Street for Bloomberg News and kind of like how markets work. And, you know, it's called market structure was the name of the beat. So it's like, are markets working? Are they not working? What's are regulators trying to like, you know, change the way markets operate? Is there scams and fraud and stuff like that? So I'd gotten a pretty good understanding of like the derivatives market and the bond market. When crypto kind of came, it was already around, of course, but it sort of like came back onto my radar in 2015 because Wall Street was starting to kind of experiment with it. And I finally kind of wrapped my head around what the blockchain aspect of this technology is. And really, it's kind of a simple concept. It's just it's a network of computers that is basically spread around the world. That's peer to peer, and it's pretty much unstoppable from a government or corporation kind of level. I realized that that's pretty much kind of the same basic architecture of what Wall Street is. It's just a network. You know, it's banks, it's their customers, like asset managers and hedge funds, pensions. You know, all sorts of folks that are just in a big network. They're trading, you know, trillions of dollars amongst themselves throughout the year. And if they could kind of adopt the efficiencies that were gained in a blockchain network in their own networks, I thought, man, that could really, you know, save them hundreds of millions of dollars probably a year in just like in speeding up trades, for example, in a very simple case. So that kind of sparked my interest, and I started covering it, and it's just kind of grown from there. And within a couple of years, by 2017, you might recall, that's when kind of I think Bitcoin sort of broke through to the public consciousness in a big way, because it hit $20,000 for the first time. everyone, yeah, Thanksgiving, I remember in 2017, everyone was talking about crypto for the first time. So it was a little crazy. I feel like I got in a little bit early on it, but that's certainly not as early as, other reporters out there. But it's just a fascinating story. And I think something that is changing the world and, you know, has the potential to do a lot of amazing stuff. Of course, there's the downsides to it as well. People have lost a lot of money and there's a lot of scams. But I think that's kind of par for the course when you've got any sort of asset class out there that you're talking about or any kind of market at all. So, yeah, it's been a wild ride. And I decided to start Decentral Media last year because I wanted to focus kind of more exclusively on the people who are making all this stuff happen. I think they're really interesting, pretty weird, smart, and for the most part, pretty good people, you know. So my partner and I started Decentral, and we're kind of focusing on those folks and just trying to tell the stories, like make this industry a little more human rather than always talking about the technology. You know, we really want to bring the people to the front. So that's what Decentral is all about.
Nice. Yeah, it's really interesting when we think about the financial markets, sort of the traditional stock market. Are there people that we think about? And I don't necessarily think that there are. And within crypto, it's not necessarily in its infancy, but probably still kind of in its infancy. And there are people and characters that we can look to. And Does that make it better? Just it humanizes it.
Yeah, I think it does. And I think it's a nice way. I think some people can be put off by it, by they think that it's complicated and that it's, you know, very hard to understand. And I think some mainstream media kind of portray it that way because maybe they don't quite understand it. But so, and I think that gets through to people and it's sort of, it's off-putting. So if my approach is, I want to tell you a story about a really interesting person and I want to make this person like three-dimensional to you. And along the way, I'm going to tell you what they're doing in crypto or in Web3. And I think if you tell somebody an interesting story and you introduce them to a really fascinating person, I think that it just makes the learning easier. And it's then you can start talking about, okay, what's an NFT or what's a decentralized exchange or what does it actually mean to be peer-to-peer? You know, so those things, I think, come across more easily in the context of like a person, you know, and you're telling their story and they can kind of explain it in their own words.
Yeah, that's interesting. Narrative does make it more accessible to us.
Yeah.
And then obviously we run the risk of the Sam Bankman-Frieds and the Elizabeth Holmeses of the world. Obviously Elizabeth Holmes not involved with crypto.
Yeah.
But if you look at the history of the stock market and just traditional financial markets, they're littered with fraud and bad actors as well. How do you think about the Sam Bankman-Fried, the whole FTX in the context of the greater industry?
Yeah, I think it was quite shocking because I think he had sort of created quite an impression among among regulators and politicians and among charitable giving, the charitable giving world that, you know, this guy was really kind of on the up and up and he was a good person and he was into, you know, intrinsic altruism. And, you know, you can go like you watch baseball, there's the FTX logo on, you know, the umpire's jersey or their, you know, the shield that they wear, you know? So it was kind of everywhere. And what I try to tell people is, the whole point of crypto and Bitcoin to begin with was giving people more control over their finances and their money. And so you really should embrace that because that's what the best of it comes out, in my opinion. And if you rely on a centralized place like an exchange like FTX to hold your crypto, you're running the risk that they're going to be fraudulent. And it's happened over and over again, basically from the beginning of crypto when Mt. Gox went down in early 2013. There have been a number of exchanges that have all gone the same way. And I just don't understand why people don't learn the lesson. Like, yes, use an exchange to go and buy and sell things, but then you got to, you know, you really need to store your crypto in your own wallet. You need to take custody of it because that's really what this technology is all about. You're in control. You don't have the option of a hacker getting into an exchange or a fraud like Bankman-Fried, you know, kind of like pissing away all of your money. You need to take control of it. So I think it's a tough lesson to learn. And I've been covering this now for 7 years and it's just happened over and over again. And I really try as much as possible to tell people, you know, don't leave your money in someone else's hands. Like, you know, so again, it's, I know a lot of people lost a lot of money and I would never be the person to say, I told you so, but that is kind of one of the general rules here is like, get your own wallet, get comfortable with it and make sure that you're protecting what you own because, you know, a lot of people made a lot of money in recent bull markets in crypto. And, you know, a lot of that's probably all gone now because they left it on FTX. So it's kind of a shame. And I wish that the centralized actors, you know, in this industry were just more responsible and more on the up and up.
How do you see, or how do you think about regulation in the space?
I think it's definitely, it's been a very mixed bag so far. I think the SEC is not doing a good job of letting people know what is okay and what's not okay. They've been doing something called regulation through enforcement action. So basically they'll find some bad actor out there doing something like selling an unregistered security, you know, in their opinion. And so they'll sue them and they'll like go through an enforcement action and then kind of make up the rule. Not they're not making them up, but they're sort of enforcing the rules through these actions. And so then the rest of the industry is supposed to pay attention to that and like think like, oh, are we selling unregistered securities too? We might want to stop that. The problem with that is it's, you know, it's rather case specific about who's getting sued and settling with the SEC. And, you know, maybe your project is a little bit different and you're not sure like, oh, is this going to get me in trouble or not? And you don't have a way of knowing. What I would much rather see is Congress getting involved and writing some new legislation to regulate this market, because the legislation being used now in the SEC's case, you know, dates back to the 1940s. It was about a guy selling shares in orange groves in Florida, and whether, you know, he was securitizing that real estate. It's called the Howey test. And today in crypto, you might be dealing as a counterparty with a smart contract, with a piece of code. And there's all these new things that have developed, and it's really kind of left the law in the dust. So I think Congress needs to really get involved and start writing new rules that take into account, you know, like what's a smart contract and who's responsible for that if something goes wrong. And, you know, there's just a ton of questions that aren't being answered right now. So that's my hope. It's definitely going to be regulated. There's no way they're going to leave this alone. And it is regulated, you know, in a lot of places, so including the United States. But again, I think it really needs to be the kind of basic framework needs to be updated to the 21st century.
It's interesting. Do you have a sense how many governmental agencies are responsible or work around the traditional stock market? You mentioned the SEC, you've got organizations like FINRA. Do you have a sense of roughly just how are there five? Are there a dozen?
In the stock market or in crypto?
In the stock market.
Yeah. I mean, let's see. Yeah, the SEC is there. Tangentially, there's like the OCC, which regulates banks. There's the FDIC. If stock market in particular, it's really the SEC's job. Like that's their main, you know, that's the main regulator. And then on the futures or the derivative side, you've got the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. And then you've got, I think, tangential regulators that kind of touch it. But yeah, when you're talking about stocks, it's really the SEC.
Yeah, got it. And what also sort of jumped into my head as you were talking about these enforcement actions, like we're all familiar with the Internal Revenue Code, how it's 7,000 pages, give or take, but there's like 80,000 pages of case law that are constantly being adjudicated. Is that a fair parallel to what they're sort of doing right now, instead of actually writing the making laws, which is what Congress, the legislators, should be doing? It's the SEC out there just having enforcement, and then that sort of de facto becomes our law.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is a fair comparison. I mean, I don't think it's 80,000 pages of case law in crypto, you know, but I think another thing that's going on right now is Gary Gensler is the chairman at the SEC, and he said repeatedly in public that he thinks they have all the tools they need. They don't need congressional, you know, any congressional updates to do what he's doing in crypto. I think that's a mistake. I think he's probably worried that if Congress starts writing laws, you know, it might limit some of the abilities that the SEC has, or it might take away some of the power that they have, because there's always, you know, just like in any industry, there are power grabs in Washington by regulatory agencies like the SEC and the CFTC often compete in certain areas, and they kind of have their own little fiefdoms of different Congress people who are, you know, running the committees that oversee each of those agencies. And it's just kind of like gets down to kind of base level politics at some point. So there is always a worry, I think, at these agencies that they're going to lose some of that turf, or they're going to lose some of their ability to regulate things. And so it's kind of, that's where it gets kind of messy and human.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you feel like, do you think slash feel like there should be its own a new or independent entity aside from the SEC, who's responsible for, assuming if we could map out in an appropriate way forward, it would be the legislator creating a law, and then based on that, or laws, do you think that it should fall under the purview of the SEC, or do you think it's wiser or more prudent to create a new organization?
Yeah, no, I think the existing agencies can do a good job of it if they had updated rules and sort of frameworks. So, because I do think a lot of what's created in crypto sure looks like a security to me. You know, if you're hoping that it's going to gain in value, or that you're getting some kind of monetary reward for investing in it, if it's controlled by a certain number of people who are, you know, trying to make it go up in value, you know, these are some of the basic definitions of what a security is. And there's a list of like five or six things. A lot of the things created in crypto, I think, check all of those boxes. So I don't think the SEC is out of its boundaries here, but I do think, like I've been saying, it's just a new like rule book needs to be written. So I think the SEC could definitely handle the things that kind of brush up against the securities laws. And then the CFTC should, I think, be regulating the parts of the crypto market that are based on derivatives, like Bitcoin futures, which they already do, or Ethereum futures, or any kind of derivative product. So I think we've got, you know, the agencies, and I think that their boundaries are good as they exist today. I just think that there needs to be an update to the legislation.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So from your background and experience, you know, 17 years with Bloomberg, working in Wall Street, in Manhattan, covering all of that, and now your passion for crypto, what is the purpose of legislation? Is it to protect consumers, protect investors?
Yeah, definitely both of those things. And it's also, you know, we want to remain competitive. We like to have this industry be mostly, or, you know, we want to have the United States be a good place for this industry to be headquartered, right? And so you need to have that clarity, because a lot of the companies I write about, they say to me over and over, you know, we want to follow the rules and we will follow the rules. We just don't know what they are, you know, and that's the problem. So if the United States falls behind in that, a lot of these companies can go to Europe, or they can go to Asia, or they can go offshore. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a reason that FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried were based in the Bahamas. You know, they were doing stuff right off the bat that probably, you know, would not have been allowed in the United States. So it you don't want to have this kind of regulation arbitrage where you can go to the Bahamas. And like, so I think different parts of the world need to coordinate so that the set of rules that doesn't drastically change. You know, I know that's asking a lot, but in the traditional financial world, it's pretty much worked. And you kind of get a sense from a company if, like today, if like a company that's trying to be reputable is based in some location where, you know, it's kind of like there are no rules, you know, you get, it's a signal, right? So I think it self-regulates a little bit in that way. So yeah, it's to protect people. It's to have transparency into these operations. So if someone says they've got, you know, $40 billion in assets on their balance sheet, it's actually real. And it's not this like FTT coin that was created and sort of has a very ephemeral value and that can crash, you know, to zero in a matter of hours, as we saw. And it's to just create a good overall environment for this industry to grow, like in the United States and in other parts of the world.
That makes a ton of sense. Do you see that there is an appetite in Washington for doing this?
That's a challenge. I think the challenge is educating Congress, people in Congress on this issue, because, you know, let's be honest, a lot of people in Congress are older and they might not, you know, be as familiar with this technology as they could be. And explaining it and kind of getting through as to why it's important and why it's an innovation is it can be a challenge. And I know there are a lot of groups that have come up in recent years to do that, to lobby and to educate the folks in Washington on this industry. Yeah, so, and I think there are certain leaders out there that are doing this in Congress already. It's so that those numbers are growing. And then on the other hand, you've got folks who only see the scams and only see like the FTXs of the world and think that it's all kind of like this Wild West that needs to be regulated out of existence. So, you know, that's the other spectrum here. So I think as this industry grows and as it matures, more people in Washington will get it, that it's not going away. I don't believe it's going away. It's here to stay. And I think, yeah, so just it's kind of a slow, painful process, but education is the best way to do it at this point.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, as they always do, Matthew, I'm sure that they'll act prudently and with a lot of wisdom. So,
yeah.
Matt, thank you so much for coming on that one. Yes. Thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they check out Decential Media, and where can they get a copy of Out of the Ether?
Yeah. Thank you for having me, George. Yeah, the website is decentral.io. That's decential.io. We are on Twitter at Decential Media. The book you can find anywhere online that you get books. If you want one of the special editions, there were only 1,000 printed, and you can mint an NFT that represents the book. You can look that up at outoftheether.net. Let's see. Yeah, that's about it. So really enjoyed talking to you, George. Thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah. Well, if you enjoyed this much as I did, show Matthew your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Check out Decential Media at decential.io. Find them on Twitter as well under Decential Media. And then pick up a copy of Out of the Ether wherever you buy your books, or go to outoftheether.net and pick up the NFT version of it. Thanks again, Matt.
Thank you.
And until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.